join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fishing Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and we are recording an episode ad hoc tonight. No set conversation point. We are just catching up. The summer's been busy for all of us. We've been all over the U.S. doing various trips or traveling, some for work, some for pleasure, some for family, some for, I don't know, just to do it. But either way, we're going to be here for the next little bit chatting, so enjoy our banter. Colin, what have you been up to?
Hey everyone, I'm Colin, and you know, I've just been exploring the outdoors in Oregon here. I've been going on a bunch of hikes. We'll talk about some of the stuff that I've come across on my hikes later in the show. And then trying to get after some invasive species. I think I talked about it last time. Last time I was on the show, and I'll give a little bit of recap and some updates. We can call it learning as I grow in my invasive species control methods. And yeah, so it was a fun discussion. So hope people enjoy it.
Corey, what do you got?
So in my area, we had a case of CWD.
What?
Yeah. So I it was at a captive cervid farm. So a deer farm. They had trophy bucks, and they killed every one of them and tested each one, and it was just the one deer that tested positive. But it's only like, you know, 15 miles from my house, but they made the whole upper section of the county a disease management area. So I have some questions on how I'm going to handle my deer if I get any in this area. I did open up some opportunities, though. The Pennsylvania Game Commission designated this, I forget how many square miles, as a disease management area, but within that, they created a DMAP area where they're issuing additional doe tags. So I got one of those. So I have expanded my hunting opportunities. I just have to figure out how I'm going to handle the meat if I get something. And they're going to provide testing sites. I just got to do some research, figure out where I need to go and what I need to do. And then I'm definitely going to wait. You know, having a wife and three kids that all eat it, I'm definitely going to have it tested before we consume any. Because I don't want to be the first, you know, hey, you're the first one that had ever did that to.
Patient yeah, zero.
I don't want to be, you know, with my luck, that's me. So I'm going to take precautions.
Here we have the Sly family in Pennsylvania that are
the case study
carriers now. Thank you, everyone. Yeah.
So.
It always brings up some interesting questions. We had last year, AJ's dad shot his mule deer in the area in Wyoming we were hunting at. Is a CWD area, and I don't know if they had a, I forget if it was mild case or what it was, but. Or mild area, I forget, but we had it tested. We had the opportunity, like the biologist was just there where we were at, and we're like, "Hey, test this." And he showed me. I think there were some pictures we posted on Instagram. I was with them. That was like last October. Right. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's cool to watch them do it to do the test, because they get the like thyroids basically at the very very back of the skull. So we had to like cut it at the base, then peel it back, and then cut them out basically behind the jaw is where they like to test them at.
Yeah, I think what Pennsylvania is going to do, I think, is a lot like what I see Wisconsin has done. Like Doug Duren posts about it, is the big dumpsters. See, like double bag the head and throw the head in the dumpster with your information, and they'll test it and get back to you. So I won't get the opportunity to watch a biologist do it or anything like that. It's just basically a throw it in a collection container and wait for results, however long that takes. And,
yeah, not sure. I know there's some mandatory testing areas here in Colorado, so I gotta navigate that this year too. I definitely don't think I would be consuming it either. It's such a, it's a hard thing to think about. What if you had one steak, it was in a pack, and it like fell into a bag of others, and you cooked it, and then you didn't realize until you were cleaning up after dinner that that pack was marked from that deer that you were waiting test results to get back.
I guess there's nothing I can do at that point. I've been slacking. I've been slacking recently. Like last night, I was like, "Justin, Jeff just left. We got to clean up. You're gonna have to edit this week." And I waited until the last minute to tell.
Oh
him
yeah.
That.
Oh yeah.
Gotta,
I wanted to ask about that. How
yeah,
was
yeah.
That?
Hold on. You gotta tell us. You gotta tell us the whole story of yeah. how Jeff made it to your house.
Talk about Jeff Benda, right?
Jeff
wild
Benda.
Game,
yep.
Wild fishing game.
Wild game and fish.
Crack name. Yeah, crack name for an Instagram profile, really.
But
he really capitalized on that.
He did.
Go ahead, Corey.
So his wife's family is having a wedding in Pittsburgh, and so they flew into Pittsburgh at the beginning of the week, and they wanted to check out Niagara Falls, and then after Niagara Falls, heading back down to Pittsburgh, they want to stop in the Allegheny National Forest. And we're actually right smack dab on the way in the middle between Pittsburgh and Niagara Falls. So he asked me, what is there to do in the National Forest and everything? So we got to talking. I was like, yeah, you need to check out this place and that place. And they have a good campground here. And I was like, man, if you're there, you know, you're not too far from my house, you should stop by if you have time. So we planned it where he would stop by on an evening, and that's what he did. He and his wife and his daughter stopped, and he brought antelope, top round and bottom round, and we put that on the pellet grill, and I marinated venison top round, and we made that into kebabs with like portobello mushrooms and peppers and onions, and put that on the pellet grill. And that, and he used a jacquard, I think I'm pronouncing that right, jacquard meat tenderizer. So it's like a bunch of needles and you just press into it, so the antelope was super tender.
Oh, yeah.
Like made it to a nice medium rare, and I mean, it was like melt in your mouth. First time I ever had antelope. And we made it.
So you ready to come to Wyoming?
Yeah, that's like my wife really liked it too. And my son was like, "Dad, you need to go hunting for antelope." I was like, "Yes, you are correct. I need to go do that."
$30 tag, man. $30 for out-of-state doe tag.
Nice.
How long's the season?
There's two seasons. It's either the first part of October or the second part of October.
All right. That's right when my deer season starts up here, which are I'm going to need all the available time I can get if I'm going to take one of those.
Yeah, we have what was it? I think September 1st, antelope archery begins here, and I think antelope or archery elk as well, and bear. Nice. Pretty right. much September it begins, and then October. Sorry, did I say September before or October?
October.
Yeah, October. So, and October starts matching with the rifle seasons here and stuff.
Right on.
But yeah, so sorry, Corey, I interrupted you.
Yeah, but we had that. The kids, I think all three of my kids ate the antelope and enjoyed it. And I made a little charcuterie board. I had goose pastrami, venison pepperoni, some venison hot cheese sticks, and there's a not too far from here a place makes cheese. It's called Cuba Cheese in Cuba, New York, and so we had.
I was about to say Cuba, the country.
No, Cuba, New York. So we had like this really good mozzarella and cheddar cheese, and then like a bacon cheddar cheese spread, and toasted baguette, and some townhouse crackers and club crackers. It was a nice spread. We enjoyed that. Because his daughter is about the same age as my kids, so they got along really well, and they were here for like 4 hours. It was nice. So
nice. That's really good to hear. I was really happy to see that picture.
Yeah,
me too. I'm glad you guys.
He came to Pennsylvania. Like it's been raining nonstop for like a week and a half, and so like all the rivers and streams are all high and muddy. So he wanted to go fishing and or floating in the canoe with the family, and can't do that. Everything's high and muddy. But it was thunder and lightning as we're cooking out. He has. I'll have to send you the picture. He's holding an umbrella over me as I'm grilling on the pellet grill because it's pouring down rain. But yeah, it was a good time.
That's teamwork.
Right. Yep. Yeah, it was nice to meet him. I've never even met you in person, Justin. We were talking about that.
It's true.
I haven't met you, Corey.
Yeah. So nobody wants to come to PA.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. I'm coming out this winter.
Yeah, we'll have to make
you
that.
You told me you
sure
were coming
happens.
To Colorado this year, but then you changed it.
Well, we were going to go to Colorado last year, but COVID.
Yeah. Well, then you said this year maybe.
We wanted to take a vacation with the kids this year, so we switched that up and did a kid-friendly vacation, but maybe next year. I'm still pushing because I want to.
Next year.
We had a fly fishing trip scheduled. And I want to catch some cutthroat.
Oh, yeah. I was just fishing 4th of July weekend. We were fishing up at a lake, Montgomery Reservoir up by Breckenridge. And there's a native cutthroat in there.
Did you catch any?
No, I did not catch any cutthroat trout. We caught one brown trout and four rainbows.
Nice.
Which we kept the rainbows. I took two, and we made trout meuniere. I think Colin, I talked about this on the last episode, but
yeah, can you describe it again?
Yeah, so trout meuniere. You basically like you gut the trout, you gill it. So I basically instead of just gilling it only. I took its entire head off and just had the meat of the fish. So not filleted, still bone on. And you dust it in flour. Season it with salt and pepper. Dust it with flour. And then you, like, knock the flour off to make sure there's none, like, extra. And then you melt clarified butter in a pan. And you basically fry it in that pan. And then from there, you take that butter out and then put some more butter back in, and then put parsley and lemon juice in there to make your sauce. And then you pour that over the top of the trout. It was really good. Zoe ate it. My daughter ate it. She's normally not a fish on the bone type girl, but... she ate that one pretty well. And then we have the other three. No, nice. The other two. So we have one more rainbow and one more brown trout, which I'm saving. But I'm actually going to post that recipe up on Harvesting Nature here pretty soon on the website.
Oh, yeah.
We need to post that bear Dominican pepper steaks.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that the other day, actually. That would be a good one to post here soon. Probably when fall bear, or in a week or so, or 2 weeks or three. I don't know. What about that article about the Oregon? Wow, a lot of attention.
Oh yeah, that got some traction for sure. Yeah, and I think rightfully so. I mean, I'd like to put it out there to everyone that we're not in the business of trying to cause like divide or anything, or like sow discord, or you know, have the clickbaity articles and everything. But I mean, it was surely an attention grabbing headline. I mean, there are people in Oregon who want to outlaw, and it's getting signatures too, but they want to outlaw the exemptions to the animal cruelty laws in Oregon, which allow for hunting, trapping, husbandry practices. Basically, you can't touch an animal if it's going to harm or hurt the animal.
What was it? Proposition what? 13?
IP, initial...
Oh, there it is. Yes on IP.org.
Initial proposition.
Yeah.
Right?
So I think it's due. We should explain exactly what the initial proposition process is.
You mean like how a bill becomes a law? Like the Schoolhouse Rock stuff, or
you gotta sing it. No, as far as like this particular case in Oregon, because like to get a proposition they have to get 1,000 signatures. And then once they get the 1,000 signatures, then it becomes an initial proposition. Then they have to get 100,000 signatures in order for it to go on the ballot of 2022's election to be voted by the majority or by the population as a bill.
Right. And I don't...
Correct.
Does their website have the current signature count?
No, because they, when I wrote the article, I was a little bit late. I was trying to catch it right before it went. So I think the cutoff period may have been like the 10th or 11th of July that they needed the signatures by, and I was trying to catch it on that day, and I just kind of slipped up and didn't catch it in time. But so they pulled the signature area down so that it can be counted for the official count.
Okay. So yeah, it's not like it's not happening. It's not happening. It's just there's a movement within Oregon that's trying to do it. And I think maybe some of that got lost in the article title where that it was like definitely happening. But yeah, just to clear some of that.
But I mean, looking at the bill itself, like I just wanted to put it out there for like conversation and awareness, what I think was my main piece with putting it out there. You know, granted, yes, I know it's going to garner attention, but I obviously write things so people read it.
We're not going to write
it's
bland stuff.
No. Well, they're like, oh, look at those guys at Harvest of Nature. Such mediocre writing. But no, I mean, I explained exactly what it was, and I pointed out some points that I thought that were interesting, like the ability of the organization behind the bill to just sort of like, oh yeah, this attack, they're basically like, it's an attack on hunting and fishing and trapping and agriculture, animal agriculture. And what stood out a lot about reading the FAQs, they're like, Oregon's this great agriculture state and we don't need meat or animal agriculture because we have all these other great agriculture outlets. And on top of that, we predict that without animal agriculture, the system will just figure itself out and everybody will start growing meat substitute products that are equitable and protein value. And it'll sort of work itself out is the way that I read into their section. And I was like, wow, that's a bold statement.
It's a very egregious assumption, I think, because meat will just come from somewhere else.
But I also think too, like the agriculture industry nationwide and even at the state level, like being as strong as it is, would never let this proposal become a bill, or this bill become a law. Like, meh.
And I think we said that a couple times in the comments on our Instagram, is like trying to, to see people getting riled up and you're just trying to put it down. Like, oh, we don't think it's going anywhere. We just wanted to put it out there that this is happening. There are way too many farmers and hunters in Oregon to let that, even if it does come up for election in a vote, I don't think it'll ever happen.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about animal cruelty, like, no one's for animal cruelty.
Right.
Yeah, well, I guess I won't say no one. There's probably people for animal cruelty, but I don't know of any personally.
they're not held in high regard.
No. But there are people that are against animal cruelty, but when you start talking about agriculture practices that are humane, or, you know, hunting and angling in a humane manner for food, not for trophy hunting, all this, like, you get into all these conversations, and it's like, the more you have the conversations, the more people are like, oh yeah, that, okay, I'm okay with that, like, that seems good. And then when you have a very opposite side of the spectrum bill like this, that's like, nope, all of it gone, punishable by losing your left hand. And I think it's a bit extreme, but I think the important takeaway is that as those people who enjoy the outdoors and enjoy hunting and fishing and eating animal products through the wild or through agricultural raised means, like, we should keep an eye on this and watch and do our part to make sure that we're kind of challenging these thoughts, because these are how misconceptions like that turn into uneducated movements. Yep. Those uneducated movements definitely, like, kind of threaten what we'd love to do. Yeah. I'm off my soapbox.
No, I think you're spot on with that.
But some of the comments cracked me up, though. I will tell you that.
If any of the people who commented are listening, we do appreciate it, because it kept the conversation going for sure.
Yeah. Let's see. So when we first got on, you guys were talking about your hunting season, but what have you guys been doing outdoor wise?
Corey, you go first. We've been talking a bunch.
This time of year, I typically do a lot of smallmouth fishing, but it's rained so much and the creeks are just blown out. I haven't been able to do that. We took the kids to a farm pond up the road and catching some pretty big bluegill, which was fun. Couldn't keep a line in the water for the first half hour, 45 minutes. It just kept getting crushed by those bluegill, and they weren't small either. They were, you know, nice 9-inch dinner plate size bluegill. But
man, I love bluegill.
It's a real small farm pond. We didn't keep any. We tossed them back. I didn't want to take the farmer's fish. But
that's fair. I have a question.
Yes.
I have a question. You're competing in the Go Wild Bass Tournament?
I was, yeah. I think it's officially over.
Is it? Did you win?
No, not even close.
Didn't last.
So
didn't last year you came in, like, you placed, didn't you, last year or something?
No. I think I had a better chance last year if I took it more seriously. But so it's kind of on the honor system, but they do have ways to kind of keep you honest. So you catch either, it's only smallmouth or largemouth bass, and when you registered for the tournament, they sent you an email with like a logo for the tournament. So you have to print that out, and then each time you catch a fish, you take a picture of it on like a bump board, or you can't use a tape measure. You can't use anything flexible. So I had like a carpenter's ruler, you know, one that like you fold, you can fold up. Mm-hmm. And you take a picture of that on the bump board or measuring stick with that logo in the background, and you log that as a trophy on Go Wild, and then you accumulate total inches, and that's how, you know, that's how they keep track of who's winning his inches. And I think last year I had like four or five fish, you know, average, you know, maybe like 40 inches of fish. This year I might have had 80 inches. But do you know what the first place? Yeah, I'll pull up the announcement of who won. Let's see if I can find it real quick.
So only do the smallmouth bass and the largemouth bass compete in the same like categories? Is it just a general category?
Well, see, that this year it seemed to be that way. It was like it didn't matter if it was a largemouth or a smallmouth at all. It was like together. Last year it was smallmouth or largemouth, so you kind of had two different. And I thought I would have a good chance because I, you know, it seemed like a lot of people were doing. A lot more people were doing the largemouth, and I had a couple nice smallmouth to start, and then, like, I don't know what happened. I don't know if we went on vacation or what happened. I couldn't go fishing as much as I wanted to, and, like, after the first week, I kind of gave up. But, so this year, I think I had about 80 inches of fish. Do you want to take a guess at the winner, the grand prize? Total
3,214.
It's 2,037. 2,037 wow. Inches of bass is what.
That's a lot of bass.
What won second place? Yeah, second place was 1,762, and then it dropped considerably after that, down to 719, 696, 508 were the top five. So
someone was out there getting after it. Pretty regularly, if they had to get that much.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the average
guy
size
that came
of the
in
bass?
Second, we were. Yeah. The guy that came in second, we were actually talking on, you know, on one of my entries. He, because I, you know, so yeah, you're another 10 inch bass. It adds to my total. I'll never get. His name's Jim Litwin. I'll never catch Jim. And he said like it was fish all, you know, he has a full-time job, so he's like, as soon as he got home from work, he went fishing and fished until he went to bed and did that every day, and he's like, it kind of took the fun out of fishing. So, but I guess that's what you got to do to get 1,700 inches of fish.
Yeah.
But jeez. They have some good prizes too, and like they had a weekly winner if you had the biggest fish of the week. You got like a hat and a shirt and some lures and stuff like that. And so I was kind of hoping for that because I've caught some nice smallmouth in the stream by the house that, you know, push that 20 inch mark. Yeah. And I thought maybe I can get, you know, in as a weekly winner. But I think my biggest fish was 14. But so most of the weekly winners were between 20 and 22 inches. But it was fun.
And you don't want it to feel like a chore either. Like, you got to go do it just, you know.
Yeah, although I don't do enough to make it a chore. But, like,
yeah. I mean, if you're trying to get, like, the 2,000 inches or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, like,
yeah.
It's kind of I can see where that guy's coming from where he's like, yeah, it kind of took the fun out of it. So.
I would wait until the kids were in bed, and I'd have, you know, an hour, hour and a half to fish before it got too dark.
What time of year is the bass fishing contest at? Is it in the winter or summer, spring?
So it just finished up.
Okay.
Yeah, it just ended this past weekend. So it's 4 weeks long. It started the second half of June and ended the first half of July. All
right. So
went through the first half.
Was it pretty buggy? You said you were going out like right before it got too dark. Was it pretty buggy out and stuff? You getting eaten alive? I know my parents who are in central PA. It was pretty hot there the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't terrible. Nothing out of the ordinary.
Do you get any cicadas up by you?
No, we're too far north.
All right.
Oh, man, I want to hear this story about the cicadas.
What, like the background on them, or?
All of it. I mean, you had planned to consume these.
Oh, yeah, there was a twist in that, a fascinating biological twist, which...
So let's start at the beginning.
So this was, I mean, they're like long gone now, I think. I don't think they're around anymore. They're only out for a few weeks. But it's Brood 10, also called Brood X, because of the Roman numeral. These are 17-year cicadas, so they come out every 17 years. They hatch. They're everywhere. There's like literally billions of them. They start around like Chesapeake Bay area, so like Virginia, Delaware, Maryland. That's kind of where they come out. I think the Carolinas too get them, like North Carolina. So as it gets warmer, and it gets warmer farther north, and they start moving farther north too. So like the southern half and eastern portion of Pennsylvania get these cicadas. Like they get cicadas every year, but this particular brood they also get. So yeah, I think it was, let's see, I went home at the end of May. And I went birding with my parents and everything, and this one spot we went birding to, so they weren't at my parents' house, but we went birding maybe an hour away, and they were all over the place. It was weird how they hadn't been to my parents' house yet, but they were, you know, just less than an hour away. They were all over the place. So they come out, they lay eggs all up in the trees, they crawl everywhere, they burrow these holes, and then whatever comes out, they just die. And then they're gone, but they leave like these, like they're molts everywhere. So you see like these ghosts of them. They have like these brown shells. It's pretty like creepy looking if you don't know what you're looking at, but otherwise it's pretty cool to watch. You can watch them like literally come out of their shells. Yeah, so they lay eggs, and then it'll be another 17 years before they come out again. But there are different broods. So there are broods that come out like every year, every 3 years. I think there's one every 10 years.
I was going to say, I mean, I remember collecting those little exoskeletons when I was a kid.
Yeah, there are some that come out every year, and then occasionally it's like the 17-year one is a particularly big brood by itself. The last time I saw them was in 2004. And it would have, I think that year was also another big brood, like they lined up, which is pretty neat. Because there was like two giant broods that were, you know, joining forces, so they're pretty neat. But I collected a bunch of them.
Would you say that they were broad broods?
Broad. Yeah, they were broad broods. Yeah. So good one, Justin. So I had heard about.
But
Heard about being able to cook them, if you're brave enough, if you're up for it. And people have called them the shrimp, like shrimp of the land, land shrimp. Supposedly they kind of taste similar, but you got to catch them when they're just molted. So when they just molt, they're white. They're like pure white with these red eyes. They're the creepiest looking things you'll ever see. And they're squishy. But over the course, so I did that. I collected, I'd say probably 15 of them. I put them in a little baggie that I had. I left a little bit of air in there so they could breathe. But the way that their shells, their carapace hardens is over the course of like a few hours, they secrete this black oil. It's actually, if you've ever picked up a grasshopper and it leaves like this black stuff on you, it's the same stuff. But cicadas use that to harden their shells. So I could actually see it when I had them in this bag. They were like oozing this black grease everywhere. And getting, ew, like they were, their carapace was hardening at the same time. So like after, I think it was probably like 3 hours, they were like, I couldn't do anything with them. They wouldn't have been good. They weren't prime cicada ripeness. They were too ripe. So, we didn't just waste them. My parents have a lizard at home. So we froze them, and then, every once in a while they'll take some out and feed the gecko, and he gets a little treat that way.
Oh, that's cool.
But no, I did not get a chance to saute them up and enjoy this delicacy of the Mid-Atlantic. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I guess you have to wait another 17 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it'll be like the other broods out and stuff, but They do make a really...
Oh, so it's any brood, not just
right.
this
unique brood.
This one
was just popular because it's the big brood. It's like the real famous one. That's why...
The broad brood.
The broadest of the broods. that's why this one was getting a lot of attention. But if you do go to the Harvesting Nature page, go back a while until like late May, early June. Yeah, it would have been early June. There is a video that I put up of where we found them, and you can hear them. And it is the weirdest sound. It's like this alien like drone going on.
If you could describe it, if you could imitate it.
I don't know if I can imitate it. I'm not going to embarrass myself like that.
Yeah, there's definitely can't imitate
it. I'm not
going
to do that to myself. It sounds like some of the alien sounds out of Independence Day, you know, when they're like doing the mind control thing, the original one. Mm-mm. Never seen Independence Day?
I don't remember what it sounded like.
I'm not doing that. This isn't for you, Justin. This is for our listeners. So if you remember what the alien sounded like when they're doing the whole mind control thing...
It's like a buzzing.
Yeah, it's like a high-pitched buzzing. It's weird.
Was it like a ee or like a ee?
Yeah, that was it. Do that again, Justin. That was it. Yeah.
The ee, that's it?
Yeah, kind of.
Call it a nice E-sharp?
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know music, so I just made that up.
that's the cicada story. Well, I did in other, right. like... nature news, I stumbled across a lobster mushroom last week when I was out hiking, which is a nice surprise. I took that home and cooked it up. Still here, so I think I'm all good. But it was very tasty. Yeah. Sauteed in some...
Did you confirm the identity of this mushroom on Facebook?
I have
Facebook?
This app, actually. it's from iNaturalist. It's called Seek. Yeah.
Even
and
better.
That said it was a lobster mushroom. And then I sent it to a guy I work with who's a hobby mycologist. He's into mushrooming. And he said, yeah, it's a lobster. I guess they're pretty unmistakable. So, yeah, I cleaned it up, cut it up, and sauteed it. It was pretty good. Didn't really taste like a lobster, but yeah, it was good. It's like an earthy mushroom.
Does it look like a lobster? Like the color of it, or
yeah, that's kind of where it gets its name. Its color and the shape. So it's actually not the fungus itself. It's a parasite fungus that attaches to certain other mushrooms. So when it does that, it turns the shape of that mushroom that it attaches to. It turns it red, or like a lobster red color, but then the mushroom that it attaches to, now it looks kind of like a lobster claw. So that's where it gets its name from. Some people say it tastes like a lobster, but that's up for debate. It definitely tasted like a mushroom. So yeah, that was pretty neat.
I joined a couple foraging groups out here. I have yet to go out and forage, although I'm hearing that the spruce has the like little tips you can take right now. And that I just saw somebody posted in the group that the wild strawberries are now growing in Colorado.
The blackberries and raspberry bushes are starting to get berries right now, which is nice because they have really good wild blackberries out here.
Just watch out for bears.
Yeah, they aren't going to.
No, that's true. I realized too, we never talked about our bear hunting film or films on the podcast at all. I was thinking about that today.
Yeah, I thought they turned out great.
Where we did those two X, yeah, they were great. Corey, what did you think? Did you ever watch them?
Corey is giving us a look.
I'm busy with editing and producing and all the responsibilities of a podcast producer, so I don't get the luxury of.
He got all the videos that we sent him that ended up in the final video, in the final film. He got all those little ones. He watched all those.
Yeah. He saw the pictures.
No, I thought they turned out great. I thought Ryan and Emily did a great job on the film.
Yeah, really awesome job.
It captured the struggles of a DIY hunt in an unfamiliar land, I think, very well. And it was nice that it was successful at the end, too.
Yeah, we still have to do our Q&A.
Yeah.
We were going to do a Q&A. We need to set that up for... in the next couple weeks. That'll be fun. We did one after our Wyoming antelope film. AJ and I got on and talked about it. But it'll be fun with
the
Lotus
on. That was a good time. I went out.
With Riverside, we have the ability to get a live audience. So maybe we can get some participants from the community page.
Yeah.
That want to participate in that live Q&A and record it as a podcast.
And I think we can push it as a live too from here, right? I think it connects to like Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram live, I think.
Oh, yeah. That'd be something to look into. Yeah. That'd be cool. Be way easy.
Yeah, so we just end up doing one, and then we can all each monitor one of the accounts for questions and then maybe get people to participate. I guess people will be participating if they're asking questions, but that could be a fun way to do it. I don't know. We'll think about that. We'll put that in the works.
Dog's barking.
That's okay. Dogs are loud.
Who rings the doorbell anymore? So last time I was on, hold on for a second. Keep talking.
Who rings the doorbell? People just walk in these days.
Who just shows up?
Right? I got my new boat.
I saw that. A bear?
Yeah. It's a bear legit. I've been shopping around for like 2 weeks around here.
Why'd you go with the bear? What was your not saying it was a bad choice, just wondering your thought process. What was the factor that had you pull the trigger?
Well, so it was in my budget. I was looking to spend under $500. I'm also in a very unique position. So my draw length is 29.8. So I'm literally like on the cusp of 30, which if people are avid archers, they know that 30 is like a turning point between like a standard bow and a larger bow, which means they're more expensive, which means they jump up to like $700-$800 at the bottom end. So luckily I got under that. I went to a number of stores here and they kind of gave me some different recommendations. The reason I chose this one is that it has it can be set to a very low draw weight and it can be set to a very high draw weight, which is good because if I get tired of it or I upgrade, I can pass it down to Zoe, my daughter. Same with the draw length too. It had a pretty variable one. Also too, AJ got pretty much the same model and was having good time shooting it. And I know that he's pretty thorough in doing his research. So I went off his recommendation also. And then as I went around the stores and shopped it, it was, you know, like middle of my budget range, between 3 and 5. And then I was actually able to find an archery shop. I think it was on Amazon that had it for sale. And I really liked the one they had. It was like a full kit. I liked the pattern. I liked the setup. And then I also used my credit card on via Amazon, which gave me a bunch of points that I had accrued, so I got like a good deal on it, pretty much. So yeah. But I think this weekend, well, we're supposed to get our household goods on Friday, but if I have time on Saturday or Sunday, I'm going to take it to the shop and get it tuned up and buy some arrows. And we have one of the lakes, the reservoirs here is like a county park. And they have an archery range there that you can buy a pass, a yearly pass. And they just have hay bales out there, and you just go set up your target and shoot. So probably start doing that. Get ready for archery season. I think Ben's coming to Colorado. AJ may or may not be coming as well at some point to hunt the archery elk. I'll probably do the over-the-counter archery pronghorn and then bear, I think, as well.
Yeah. So for the archery pronghorn, what is your goal for an effective range with that new bow?
I'm going to try to get comfortable shooting at like 40. I mean, I shot my I shot my pronghorn buck last year at 36 yards with my rifle. So, yeah. So if I can get within 36 yards with a rifle, I could probably do it with a bow. I mean, I like that aspect too, of the antelope hunting. Like, I'm not big on the long range shots, as people know if they've watched the Oregon Bear film. But I like trying to get close to animals and getting a good shot. No, I'm going to connect really well. So I think that's something that intrigues me about the archery aspect is the challenge of getting close and actually stalking the game. So, but I'm excited to shoot. I haven't bought a new compound bow. Actually, I've never bought a new compound bow. My grandfather bought me my first bow when I was probably 12, 11, 13 maybe. And I shot it off and on growing up as a kid. Never shot a deer with it. Took it hunting maybe a handful of times. But this is kind of the year where I'm taking it serious just to open up my opportunities. So.
Nice. Well, looking forward to seeing the results.
Yeah, me too.
Went to an archery shoot this past weekend, but got rained out. It seems to be a common theme around here.
And it rains here every day. I don't know what you're talking about. You got to get used to it. Justin, the last time I was on, so last week, I was talking about going out for nutria, and I did. I went to this local farm, walked around for a couple hours, didn't find any, decided to check one more area before I left, and I was walking along this ditch, and there are like three big fat ones. I actually thought there were otters at first because they were swimming around like a family of otters would, but then I had my little binoculars, and looked at them, determined that they definitely were not otters because I would hate to do that and mistake something. And then as I got closer, I don't know if they saw me and started going in the water or they were just doing that, planning on it anyway, because I was pretty well hidden. And then I ended up shooting at one, and I think the water broke the BB velocity because I was shooting shotgun with BB. And I never saw it come up again. I mean, I know they can swim pretty far underwater, but it never came back up. So I don't know what happened to it. I saw the other ones swimming around again, and then they all dove before I could get a shot on them. So I don't know, but I'm going out again this weekend. I'm going to bring a 22, and that way, if it does go through the water.
I was just
going to
ask, you have to have a shotgun or you can use a rifle?
I brought the shotgun, so it's on this guy's farm, and I called him, and he's like, "Yeah, I don't care, man. You don't even have to let me know. Just show up and shoot him." So I said, "Cool." I brought the shotgun because one of the guys I work with who shot the two of them in our goose hunting spot last fall, he shot him with BB. So I thought, okay, that's perfect. I'll bring that. Didn't work for me, so I think I'll bring the 22, and that should. Hopefully it should work a little bit better. Saw a couple things where you have to give them a couple weeks if you hunted them before in an area, but I don't think they're too shy like that around here. I mean, I see them crossing the road and stuff all the time. So hopefully this weekend will be a little bit better. That's actually what just came in the mail is some ammo. I got some ammo. So yeah.
Nice. Yeah, they're starting to have it here at the different stores. Yeah.
5.56, I think.
Nice. Well, I think I'm going to have to wrap it up.
Yeah, same. I got to eat at some point.
Yeah, as much fun as this has been. But yeah, so thanks everybody for listening. Make sure you go check out social media page, all Facebook, Instagram pages. You should be following us if you're not. That way you get all that hot, sweet information right off the press. that didn't come out right.
Yep.
I think it came out just right.
Yeah, I think that's good to go.
All right, everybody. Thanks. Have a good night.